Lee McKnight is an SVP of sales with a great background in healthcare, in services industry. The man understands how to sell. And I think today you're going to enjoy Unaligned, the podcast that serves the executives of emerging middle market companies, people who are looking to find levers to pull to grow faster, to grow more effectively, to make more money. Today in Lee's call with us, we were able to explore terrible sales emails. It sounds crazy, but he and I each have a folder in our inbox where we collect the worst of the sales emails we ever get. So we pulled together a few of them. Today, if you listen, you're going to meet the narcissist, Mr. Overeager, the lazy guy, the faker, and more. The goal for us today was to share with you some of the worst to make sure that you're not doing that. But also, we have a thoughtful look into what does work. Why? How does sales use email effectively? So that said, let's talk to Lee. Lee, let me give you an introduction that your father will be proud of and that your mother will believe. Lee is the Vice President of Sales at RSW US. They specifically work with professional services firms, and they help them do the outreach to their specific target markets. Lee is the director of sales there, but his focus, or RSW's focus, is broader than just dialing for dollars. They're working all the way across omnichannel, social media, blog contents, webinars. They do use email. And not that long ago, I heard a podcast that Lee did about email, sales email. And I thought it was intriguing. And you should go follow up. Lee, where's your podcast? Where would people find that?
Yeah, we actually do. It's a video series. It's both. But the video series is more up to date. That's our YouTube channel. It's at RSWUS or RSWUS.com.
So go there, check out the email podcast that he did, or excuse me, video series that he did. Lee is a smart guy. He's not only a sales guy, but he's a JD. Right? That means you're a smart smart lawyer type, right?
I guess. I did it, yes, and survived.
So from there, went into healthcare marketing in Nashville, and now is in Cincinnati, and just generally a good guy. And if you look in the wall behind him, if you could see right through there and see the wall, you'll see he loves music. So he and I both are hacks on a guitar, but he does it in front of people. I do it all by myself. So,
well, thank you.
So we thought about this, and Lee, you and I had this conversation, and talk about terrible sales emails. Oh, man, I come across them all the time. In fact, I've got a folder, if you could look on my computer, and on the folder, it's terrible sales email, hence the clever name of this podcast episode.
Yes, I've got my own as well. I like to keep almost everyone I get, and some of them are good, mind you, but most of them not.
Good, terrible sales emails or bad?
Well, there's a little bit of both, really.
Yeah, well, you're the lawyer parsing words over there. So,
exactly.
You know, my math and my life is I get about 280, 290 emails a day. So in the morning, if I took a day off, you know, that occasional day, and then I get those 280 emails or so. I had them this morning. Then I also get probably 5 or 6 calls a day. And I don't know, I just would like your opinion at first. What do you think the odds are better?
Gosh, it's a good, I'm kind of surprised actually that you get that many calls a day. I feel like so many folks are afraid to pick up the phone. But I think for us, it's just so critical that you use all these platforms in concert with each other. I really think you have to not only have those two, but include social where it makes sense and even use things, old school things like direct mail, which is not what we're here to talk about. But to your point and why you asked the question, I definitely think the people who aren't using the phone are doing themselves a disservice. But email's still critical. It's just gotten even harder to break through.
So what do you think a good call to contact ratio would be with a telephone? And what's a good ratio if you're doing email? And I'm going to ask you to throw out these specific numbers without any advance notice. So good luck.
I love it. So probably I'll just take our own experience, right? I mean, and as our firm reaching out to marketers, predominantly, not all marketers, but what we usually see as far as breaking through is anywhere from, I'm going to say 7 to 12 touches. And I know that's a bit of a wide spectrum, but I think within those 7, I'm going to say that's over the course of 3 to 4 weeks. And I'm going to say alternate those touches to where you have minimally 2. And I'm saying going in cold. Now, when you come in and you've hit that warm to hot basket, it gets a little different, right? But just overall, generally, I'm going to say 2 to 3 calls, 2 to 3 emails at most. And then you're going to have to vary with something like a LinkedIn invite if someone's a little bit warmer, where you're not just a straight cold sell on LinkedIn, which is a whole other podcast, really, about the used car lot that's become.
But it kind of has. Yeah. I love all the delightful offers I get to partner. Partner is my favorite word. Like, I don't want to be your partner. So, anyway, another subject. You're right. Another conversation, how to use LinkedIn well. So the listeners of this podcast are typically executives of emerging middle market companies, and they may be a CEO, maybe a CFO, maybe a SVP of sales or a CMO. So what I'm hearing you say as far as practical application right out of the gate is just email alone is not a plan. That's just lazy. That's the way I see it too. So if you don't have any alignment between what your sales force is doing and what your marketing team is doing, then there's your first step, that you've got to have this integrated omni-channel. I'm old enough, we call it integrated marketing communications. Omni-channel is today's cool way of saying it.
Right.
So that'd be the first thing you'd want to look at. I mean, email alone is going to have a diminishing return. We always tell people we want to see 20 to 25% open rates if you've got a targeted, well-defined, valuable email. But if it's not valuable, it's just this pure, raunchy email junk that goes out to sell, then 10% rates become 6% rates, become 1% rates, and it's just going to go away to nothing. So the first rule of email is it has to be integrated. It can't just be this independent shot. It can't be a lazy way to get leads.
100% agree.
Which really leads the conversation to say, and maybe this is the oldest news, but the sales world has changed, right? It used to be the salesperson was in charge of the prospect. Now the prospect is in charge of the buying process. You know, we use something that we call cognitive marketing, and it's a behavioral science way to break down the steps that everybody takes when they change behavior. So selling something is helping a person change behavior. I'm buying from A, now I'm going to buy from B. Well, that's a change in behavior. And there's lots of small steps that happen. There's big public steps. There's private steps. That also is a subject for another conversation. But what I want to say is that in these steps, email has a role early stage. So you can have people who are unaware that something exists. You can have unawareness that somebody, a business, a service, a product exists. You could also have, and this is more likely, I believe, a use for email. I'm aware that a company exists, but I'm unaware of how they matter to me as a buyer.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, using email to create awareness that something exists, I think, is a horrible use of email. The GDPR and the CCPA, all the Privacy Act, all the, you know, these lists that we get. Who do we send emails to? How can we send? I got an email this morning, a terrible sales email, promising me a list of vetted opt-in executives who want email. Well, do you believe that?
No. I mean, I do get probably one of those every single day.
It's crazy. So how does this legislative approach to email impact the efficacy of email as a sales tool?
We have a couple of folks here in the office that just know more than I ever will. But it's interesting because, you know, where that started, which was, and forgive me for it,
Europe,
Europe,
GDPR.
Right? And so, right. And without getting too deep into the history of our company, it was actually started in the UK in 92. And so I say all that because our president, his name's Mark Snyder, was actually a client first. We've kept in touch with, his name's Adam Whitaker over there, and had a call to him and had a pretty good conversation just out of the gate to say, well, what does this look like? You know, and this was a good 3, 4, 5 months ago. How should we start preparing for this? And I think it is going to, it'll be interesting to see how that could could fundamentally change and already has changed to an extent. And I think a lot of that, I'm not sure these companies are really paying enough attention to it. And so as they're just spamming out all this email, I'm curious to see what their rates are looking like. And I think it's affecting them without, as I said, that maybe them even knowing it. And I don't know how these companies do what they say they're doing, like that email you got this morning. And again, we get them all the time. And our head of our list department, Nicole Bouchard, she keeps all those as well. It's kind of a wait and see on that because it could get to the point where it could dramatically affect things. But I've also heard other people talk about the fact that, well, yes, but it's also kind of lip service from the government to do it in the first place. So it'll be much of a wait and see, I think, at this point.
I'd agree with that, too. And I think, you know, any regulation, our government in the United States has produced more regulation than law, particularly right. Recently. It's easier, doesn't require, you know, all the politics and signatures. But the problem is there's no teeth to that regulation.
Right.
So we do make an effort. We use tech tools that require opt-in. We use those tools. We work with y'all, in full disclosure, and y'all promised us and declared in your contracts that we're using names and letters and that are permitted. We're permitted to send out. I always find as a salesperson the challenge in using an email to follow up with somebody I met. You know, so if I meet a prospect at a meeting, a lunch, a business, I don't ask for permission, right? I can still just send them an email because they, you know, we've talked, we've had a dialogue, there's a basis for that email. I think the problems are these big, massive, just dump in a million names. So that's, we're diving in way too deep on this. Just don't do that. It's expensive. If there are teeth to the regulations, and it's just the wrong thing to do. Most importantly, perhaps, not that following rules is not important, it's just not effective. So
no, correct.
So while we're having a little fun with what's not effective, I've chosen a few, and I think you've chosen a few of your favorite worst emails. So I want to share a few of mine, just because if you see yourself in this, if you're listening to this podcast, then I really want you to go back and look at your company's sales emails. And if they sound like this, stop. The advice is stop. And then I promise at the end of the dialogue, we're going to share a few things of how to do this well. So I put little names on mine. It helps me remember them. I don't know how you do this, but...
No, I did too, 'cause I like it.
So speaking of Mr. Overeager, I think that is my first terrible email model. So Mr. Overeager, I'm going to use real emails, names not changed, because I'm not going to protect the innocent. The guilty.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just first names, though. So Dominic. Dominic here sent me an email and said, time to chat in the subject line. And then followed up saying, I sent you an email last week about our potential partnership. And then beneficial for us to partner up on. Great English, too. Wait a second. I don't know you. You've acknowledged this, Dominic, but you're telling me you want to partner with me. I think the funniest thing with Mr. Overeager is to put these emails in the context of if we were on a date. So if we're on a date and I'm at the first few minutes of the meal and I say, you know, I married a woman named Susan. If I sat down with Susan and said, Susan, I'm kind of interested in seeing if you want to partner up. Do you think I would have had a second date?
Right.
No. But if you'll just think about these emails in terms of these dates, I mean, don't start with partnership. If you look at the cognitive model of change, Cogmar, you're first creating awareness, then you're exploring these ideas of potential benefits, and then you want to go through a phase that allows you to explore what would a partnership look like. But at that point, I'm in charge as the buyer of that whole process, of that journey. So terrible. Mr. Overeager here, starting with a proposal of marriage. Slow down, Dominic. Just pump the brakes there.
Yeah, that's become such a. I mean, that I want to partner with you, and you mentioned it here in the beginning, has become so pervasive. And again, I love the word you used. It applies. It's lazy. It's just you're trying to throw out another one of the tricks in your book. And it's not only is it audacious, for lack of a better word, but it's just almost condescending in that sense. To your point, it's like, how could you possibly think this is going to be something, a technique that's going to work?
Well, a partner is going to reveal itself, right? You're going to get me interested by solving a problem I have. You should know my business well enough, if you're going to sell to me, to send me an email that points out a specific problem I have. You should know that. It's your obligation, if you're the selling party, to know what the buying party's problems are. This partnership thing, you know, I'm in a partnership with y'all because over 12 months of work together, we know how each other works. We know, and actually it's both ways. You're evaluating me. I'm evaluating you. Do I uphold my part of the deal? Do you uphold your part of the deal? So pump the brakes. Pump the brakes on that.
100%. Yeah.
Do you have one you want to share?
I will. So I'm calling this the tone-deaf salesperson. So the reason I say tone-deaf salesperson is, and this is an old sales axiom, right? But it's know your audience, and similar to what we have already started in on. But I'll just go through a little bit of the email. But I love this one, and this was about 5 or 6 months ago. So it started out. I'm going to read a little bits and pieces, but started out informally, not necessarily a bad thing. He says, "Hey Lee, even though big things are cool, smaller projects and campaigns with our partners are the unspoken heroes that don't get as much back patting. I wanted to share two recent animated explainer videos with you that could spark some ideas," here's my favorite part, "on how we might snap into your upcoming client executions."
What's that mean?
I don't know. I don't know what that means. And so there's that. And then also, okay, and this is where I'm going to get a little pedantic, but there's a point. And then heroes, he's got an apostrophe where he shouldn't. So we got one typo. Okay, I'm certainly not going to sit here and say I've never made a typo in an email. Oh, I have. But then goes into the next piece of it, which is, and I'll move through here. He says, okay, to give context, we can pull these explainers together in the range of 10 to 20,000 roughly, and he misspelled it without the L, so it's actually roughy, depending on, and this might be the best part of the email, depending on the nitty gritty deets.
So you are a millennial, right?
I'll get to that, because now it's just like, yeah, Lee, you're just being a jerk. But okay, so we have two typos. And he's now has said two things that I'm like, okay. And then I'll finish. And so then he, and it's not the end of the email, but we already have snapped and we've got deets and we've got typos. And now the last bit, he says, "No matter what the next big or small thing will be, it's typically gonna be with our partners." So the counterpoint to me saying any of this is, Lee, you're just old. And that's fair. I'm not, but no, I'm not a millennial. But I think this is, yes, I understand the fact that our business communications have gotten looser and less formal. Fine. But know your audience here. You have no idea who you're reaching out to, apparently. And to say, throw out some of these things, and on top of that, have three typos, it's just not a good look, And you come off as kind of smarmy, kind of grating, trying too hard, and going a little bit overboard. And if nothing else, for goodness sake, proofread. Oh, my God. It's not tough. And little things happen, of course, but just that one, as I kept reading it and going for it, I was like, what are you doing? So I think to me that's the just know your audience, understand that you're emailing to, yes, millennials, but also X like me and whoever else.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that kind of casual language, let's say deets, was intentional? Because I've got a millennial in my office. He'd say deets totally. Is that okay to be casual? I'm the end of the boom. I would have been taught, no, you don't know this person.
Yeah. So I guess what's interesting, that's why I was curious to get your take on it. I think that's ultra casual, for lack of a better word. And
it's business. We're in business, right?
At the end of the day, we are still in business. Exactly. And it did kind of bug me. And I think there's a way to be casual in tone to where it's more authentic. Mm-hmm. And I know when you and I were talking about this earlier, and we get into that, the lack of just the fakeness. And, the biggest thing, when we talk with our salespeople here, and I started out as a salesperson, I still am, but wasn't the VP of sales when I started, obviously. And, it's don't talk at people, talk to them. And you come off, you risk insincerity. And we're not sending love letters to each other here, but there's a way to be authentic and actually speak to that person where you're not turning on kind of this fake smarmy, whatever it is. So there's a fine line, I guess.
So this is my next favorite guy. And we keep using this word lazy, the lazy guy. Or maybe I should call this guy the, what? You want me to do your job? Come on, man. So my best friend here, Parker, reached out and said, I'm writing from fill in the blank to ask about your benefits, health benefits at Fitzmartin, but I wanted to make sure you're the right person. Would you confirm that that's the case? And then below, I have the last email. I thought, okay, so let's go back. He's being really nice. It's been a little while since I reached out. So I wanted to see if you're the right person at your company, Fitzmartin. If not, would you direct me to the right person? Parker? Brother, if you really want to sell to my company, you could find out if I'm the right person in maybe 10 seconds or less on my website. 10 seconds or less on the website. That's not a big barrier. 100%. So I think a lot of times, maybe the sales guy's getting blamed for being lazy. I also think the marketer's lazy. If marketing is sending emails to people who they don't know if they could be a prospect, then that's just a shoot and spray and kind of see what happens idea. That's lazy marketing as well as lazy sales. Okay, one more, and then I'm tossing it back to you. The faker, because this guy just ticks me off even more. So John, my newest best friend, I got a lot of new best friends. I get a very concise short email, but it's lie. It's a lie. So it starts with re:update?
Oh, I see.
So,
that.
So the implied we've been talking and now it's up to me. Yeah. Or the other one we get is the follow up, follow up to my previous, if they're really smart, they won't say follow up to my previous email. It'll be to our prior conversation or something like that. It's a lie. We didn't have a conversation. Anyway, so that's right there in the subject line. But then it's just checking in. How are your growth initiatives going? Well, I don't know you. You're lying to me by this implied anyway. Just because you've sent an email before does not mean we have a relationship. So don't lie to me. I'm smart enough to know if I've talked to most people before. I miss a few, right?
Yeah.
It just drives me crazy.
That happens a ton. I get emails like that a lot, and it is just such a terrible sales technique. And I always wonder, so I guess they're banking on this person's so busy, maybe they forgot, and maybe they're like, oh, maybe I did talk to him, which is never gonna happen. But I always wondered, like, what if someone did come back and you were able to get on a call with them? now you have to double down, don't you? And we talked last
Well, my other one is in the same category as the I wanted to follow up with you and see if you received my previous message. Well, if I did and I wanted to talk to you, I would have called you. And I know enough about marketing and the world knows enough about marketing. You've got a tracking pixel in your email. You know if I've opened it or not. So some marketing schmuck like me, oh, no, that's terrible, has set up a workflow. And these things are just happening. So I think if you're going to run your business with integrity, run your sales with integrity, you've really got to know what your agency and marketing firm are doing, because they may be setting up these workflows. And they're probably, the best of them, are even doing A-B testing. So one of the answers to why do people do this, probably there's a percentage bump by doing these lies. I just think you've got to choose to work with integrity or not.
So I just had two other, one real example and then one just to point out because, I'll do that one first. I called it my trying to keep in with your stuff, Tolstoy.
Ooh.
And this is really weird because I don't know what's happening recently. So you get these emails that are really long, right? Which is like, just sacrilege in the sales email world, but it's usually like a conference or something like that where, and I'm talking about up front
I know.
Like, right out of the gate, usually it's a conference and you're like, but in the past 2 weeks, literally I've gotten 5 or 6 emails from actual salespeople. One was 13 paragraphs long. It was so amazing that I could never get through it right here and we would be wasting people's time, but I had to forward it to all our salespeople, just not that they would ever do something like that, but I'm like, this is a good one. You guys have to see this to believe it. I mean, think about what on your phone, especially on mobile.
Good point.
So Tolstoy, because it was just, all these emails are War and Peace. and I just, it was just crazy to me.
All right, let's go. Let's go. Two more.
I'll do my, mine's quick. So this is, I'm calling him the big baller. and the fact that, you know, we all get these generic, cute, ineffective emails from salespeople. I got one that just kind of irritated me, which I guess is a theme for me on these. And it was like that Seinfeld episode, you know, where he had a bunch of, they're all speaking in the third person. I'm dating myself. Like, you know, Jimmy's down, and then George was upset. George is getting upset. That was me after I got this email. And it's just the first line. That's it. And the rest of it was, well, was pointless. But what he says is, Lee, I'm in back-to-back meetings all day, but I wanted to take the time to send over a quick intro. So that may seem harmless, but it irked me to no end that the sense of self-importance this guy has or was trying to project.
Unbelievable.
Was like, I'm really busy, Lee, but I'm gonna give you just a brief intro here, buddy. And it's like, you know, don't bother.
So what did you call him? What was his?
The big baller.
All right. So I've got a very similar one as my rap, and that's, I called him the narcissist. So everybody has that English teacher in their life, or I hope everybody does, who sat you down and just, gosh, how do you say this delicately? Miss Palmer changed my life. I'll be positive. She changed my life by just sitting and looking at me and holding a paper and saying, you can do better. So she taught lots of techniques and things to write. But I thought my friend Ralph in my terrible sales email folder should make the star student pupil here. Oh, wait, he'd be the opposite of a star pupil. So I'm just going to read how these sentences start. And I think you'll catch on pretty fast. Hi, Sean.
Yeah.
I hope this email finds you well. I did a little research. Dot, 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 dot. I admire one of the recommendations you've made. Dot, 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 dot. This caught my attention. Dot, bah, 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 bah. Having said that, I think you'll be interested. Bah, 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 bah. If you have a few minutes this week, then I'd like to. So he didn't. He even took the time to go on LinkedIn and find a referral, you know, those gloriously self-aggrandizing things we all put on LinkedIn. So he took one,
right,
and he found one. A guy said, I'm working with Sean, has had a significant lasting impact on my management practices, blah, 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 blah. So he took the time to go there, cut and paste, or an SDR did, somebody did, an intern, some intern who's having the worst summer of their life. And they dropped it in. So I'll give him some credit. That does indicate some of that research that you and I were talking about. But
agreed.
I think it's so funny that it's buried, that Ralph buried this inside of something that was all about Ralph. I mean, how many I's? Didn't we all learn in English to not say I? Don't start every sentence with I?
Yeah.
I think that would be a bad idea to do that. That was a little joke there. Get it? The I thing. I. Yeah, okay.
But what I loved, and maybe you're going here, was the email before that he sent you.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
Where he said, I mean, I'm going to steal your thunder here, but yeah, where he says, I was thinking about Fitzmartin and realized the last email I sent a few days ago was focused too much on our company and not enough on you. Trying again in the hopes of learning more about your lead generation strategies. I was like, okay, we got something here maybe. You know, he's probably being disingenuous, but he's trying.
I'll give him that.
And then he sends you that next email several days later where, again, to your point, makes it all about him again. It's like you kind of teed yourself up. You were getting somewhere, and then, oh my God, with that quote that means nothing. I mean, he was just trying to, you know, stroke your ego or whatever.
Which
it might
does
be.
Work, by the way. I thought a lot of them because I
well,
believed
there you go,
it.
See? Well, it's not that it's not true.
Exactly. So maybe this was a fun way to yank chains, and I hope we can all recognize. Well, I hope we can't, but if we do recognize ourselves in any of these examples, man, let's go back, talk to marketing, talk to sales, use this as a training example. I'd encourage everybody to put up a folder in their mail client and just start gathering these terrible emails, and then send them to your marketing team, send them to your agency, send them to your sales team and say, here's some things not to do. Make it a working session. Maybe it's a working lunch and learn. Maybe you could draft some of these workflows and some of these individual introduction emails. And, you know, again, if it's Martin, we'd say cognitive marketing. What does somebody who's unaware of how your brand matters to them, what do they need to know? What does somebody who is aware of your brand and maybe they've been to your website, what do they need to know? What does somebody who's begun a dialogue with the sales team and what they need to hear when they're unaware is very different if they're right at the end of the deal where they're trying to, you know, maybe there's an advocacy situation inside your prospect's office and they need something to forward. Well, that maybe that's the long email that we need to do. Understand who you are, understand and research the stew out of your prospects so you can talk about them. I think that's my one takeaway. Don't talk about yourself. If you talk about yourself, you're done. Talk about them. If you're selling to me, understand my needs. My business consultant has an uncanny ability to say, for example, he'd say, agencies that spend more than 45% of their adjusted gross income on employees and internal salaries have a problem and they should learn more. Whoa, what do you think I did when I got that? I went and looked at how much of my AGI I was spending, and you know, I learned something there, and I immediately fired everybody. No, I didn't. we're actually very healthy.
Yeah, that's the key, because I guarantee you what some people, maybe not guarantee you, but some people listening, or when you say you got to research your prospect, I don't have time. Well, okay, but your example is perfect because, okay, you might not know the ins and outs of that person at that moment.
Right.
But you're speaking to them, and then when they're opening or they're clicking or they're showing interest, then you can do a deeper dive.
So especially if you're in services, you're afraid of giving it away, right? So the thing I would tell a services company is share the principles. The principle is 45% of your AGI should be spent on salaries, right? So that's a principle for my industry. Now, he didn't tell me what to do, if it's too high or too low. We didn't discuss if it's too low, here's the problems that creates. If it's too high, here's the problems that creates. So that application is why you're paying for professional services. Let's say you're selling something. Let's say you're selling a service or some capital expenditure item. Same thing. The idea that this product, this machine could do something, or a service associated could do something for your industry, we can talk about the principle of how lease operating expenses can be lowered by 30%. Would you like to learn more about that? Oh, well, yeah, that's interesting. And you're in my industry. So, you know, that then,
exactly.
But it doesn't give me anything. I've still got to buy the equipment or buy the service. So you're not giving away anything. So showing industry expertise. Now, if you're broadly positioned and serving everybody in the world, then you've got a problem. But that's a marketing problem that marketing should solve.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. And I love the way you teed off. I mean, it's funny that you and I have those folders, but I think if you are a CMO of that company or CEO, it can be such a great, valuable tool for your team that costs you nothing, right? I mean, you're getting these every day, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
And yeah, some of them are just complete trash and you know it's bad, but there are some, if you can parse it the way that we have today, I really think, as you said, have it be a learning session and it could go a long way.
Love it. Lee, you're an expert in your field. You're a leader of salespeople and marketers, and I love the insights you've offered. Love the follow-up. Have you written a book anybody can buy?
I have not. I should look into it after the action figure line. But yeah, we have a ton of content on our site and at RSW, and those videos are ideally helpful for folks, and they're all based on new business and sales. So that was great to be here. Thanks for having me, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Hope you enjoyed that podcast. We certainly had some humor and a good time with Lee. I enjoyed the conversation, but most importantly, I hope you got some value out of it. I hope you heard a few things that you can immediately implement at your offices. The main thing I really hope you heard was this idea of cognitive marketing and how that informs the use of sales, when to say what in sales emails. And if you want to talk about that, of course, shout at me. Sean@fitzmartin.com, or just call the office, 205-322-1010. Most of all, we want to be incredibly helpful to you achieving your goals. We know email is a powerful tool, and almost always it can be used more effectively. Till the next time, this is the Aligned Podcast.